Blog Talk Radio.
Our community have become toxic waste, and those in high places are planning to remove the toxic waste. And while we flitter and live this frivolous, foolish life, seeking pleasure from our bodies and pleasure from the bodies of others, and seeking to be famous and wealthy in this world, to be used by the power to make our people think that if you go to school and work hard, you too can be successful. That's a lie. I don't give a damn how many of you go to school and work hard. They select a few out of the mass to deceive the rest that this house is not your house. And you are going to have to think about a house of your own, because white America, listen to me good, man, cannot support you any longer. White America cannot give jobs to her millions of unemployed, much less ours. Did you hear me? Elijah Muhammad told us in the 60s we should pool our resources and get farmland, because there is no freedom without land. You remember those teachings? He said that the time of separation had come, and that we are going to have to think about building a nation of our own. You, in the 60s, you were ready to say it's nation time. You don't say that no more, because you have been deceived into thinking that inclusion into this is your salvation. This that you want to be included in has no future. None.
No future. None. Welcome to the Time to Leave Blog Talk Radio Show. This is the show where we discuss all things separation. Not separating from your wife, not separating from your children, not separating from your church or your family, but separating from our former slave masters. Why should we separate? Because he gives us nothing. He gives us comfort, and he has spoiled us to the point where we do not want to live an independent life. We do not want to work hard to have our own and support ourselves. So this is the show where you, the caller, you realize that it's time for us to leave. And this is the show where we discuss methods of moving. We discuss controlling the neighborhood you live in. Or if you come to the conclusion that that's not possible, what are you going to do? Well, you got to leave and go someplace where you and some more can put with like minds could come together and build a community that you can control. So this is what we talk about at this show. So please, if you hear what I say and you say, Brother Carlton, you don't know what you're talking about, brother, press that one and blast me. I deserve to be blasted. However, if you enjoy what we're talking about, you enjoy what our panel talks about, you enjoy our guests, press that one, make a comment, and ask a question. So I have run my mouth for the duration of the show, and I'm going to open the mic for two of our Time to Leave panelists, Dr. Ridgely Mufmin and my wife, Sister Magina Muhammad. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam.
Sister Magina, are you there?
I'm here. Can you hear me? Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam.
Well, Brother Carlton, you gave a very spirited introduction there, and I wonder if anybody is going to challenge you on the on what you laid out and argue that it's not time for us to leave. And unfortunately, those people don't call in. And then the people, we have a lot of people who listen, but they don't want to get involved in the discussion, I think, because they're betwixt and between, you know. They hear one thing, but then because of circumstances that they're in, family and finance and, you know, mortgage payments, car payments, et cetera, they are, you know, worried about getting involved because they don't want to be put into a corner where they are forced to have to make some serious decisions. Most times, we as black people, we wait until the fire is at the door,
mm-hmm.
and then we prepare to leave. Instead of already having a plan and also already seeing the fire down the street coming in your direction, we still, honestly, I've had some people to argue with me about staying in California.
You know, Dr. Bishop, we're having trouble hearing you.
Oh, I'm sorry. Is that better?
Yes, that's okay. Better.
All right. That people in California who are these wildfires, they still are arguing about staying, even though they know one day it's going to fall off into the ocean. They're going to have the big one, earthquake. But people get tied to an area, which in one sense is good, because that area is best for you. But most of the areas that we are tied to now are areas that we went to because of certain economic situations that were going on back in the early 1900s and middle 1900s. And that is that there was pull to come to those cities because there was expansion of manufacturing jobs and black people moving up to a higher income level by getting those manufacturing jobs in those cities. But now the manufacturing jobs are going overseas. And now what's left is cities full of people, but no jobs, in particular for black people and a black male in particular. And now we're saying, let's go for ourselves. Let's come on back to the South where we got some land. Some matter of fact, there's more black people got land in Chicago, more black people who live in Chicago. Okay, no. There's more land owned by people in Chicago in Mississippi than the people in Mississippi own. So more black folks in Chicago own farmland in Mississippi, more so than people who still live in Mississippi. And those people, you know, really ain't planning to come back, except now they are coming back. I just heard something today on NPR and talking about upcoming elections. And it was talking about, in particular, the race for governor, and they made a statement. It said, well, you have to be careful in terms of how you make your appeal to the Georgia populace because it's not the same population that was here 5 or 10 years ago. He said people are coming in from New York. They're coming in from Chicago. They're coming in from Ohio. That's what they said. They're coming in from California. They said they're even coming up from Florida. So you got a whole different set of people that's coming into Georgia now, and so the politicians have to be aware of that in terms of who are they going to cater to. Now, but that bears witness to what I've already been saying. There's a movement going on of people moving from the north, east, northwest, north central, mm-hmm. moving from the west, and moving from even from Florida up into those states, those eight states that we used to be slaves in and built up and owned, and after slavery actually bought land in those states. And now people are coming back to that area regardless of what we do. So what we're trying to do in the Time to Leave movement, at least is not what I'm pushing, is let's try to organize those people who are already coming. So they don't all wind up in Atlanta and in the same transportation situation, crime situation, et cetera, that they left when they left New York or Chicago. There's a whole lot more out there than Atlanta, okay? And the cooker homes and cooker-cutter communities, they're really not communities. They are just places to stay because people are so afraid of each other in those cities that they move to a nice – it's nice on the outside, but people stay inside and they visit friends but not necessarily make any friends in that community. Everybody's isolated. So there's no community, all right? What we're trying to build down here at Muhammad Farms is a community. In other words, get people who have like minds and intents and actually want to be together and communicate and build with each other so that we can actually have a community, a neighborhood, a village of like-minded people trying to do some positive stuff and not just residents. You know, just because you have residents together don't mean that you are, in fact, a family or a community. And we used to have communities, where we actually knew one another. Now we just have residences. So what we're trying to do is establish, again, the idea of community, the village, and we want to make an economic difference in people's lives so they can actually begin to be wealthy and produce products, goods, and services to be healthy, wealthy, and wise. So that's my. And this past weekend, we went and visited a brother, and we can talk about that, what he's doing. But what I was fascinated about is one of the main reasons I went and I saw it. It's, you know, small scale wood cutting, making lumber, you know, out of trees, small scale,
yes,
out of the dirt, out of the clay, making brick. So that, you know, Muhammad Farms, we've gone pretty far with the food production. And my wife, of course, is an excellent seamstress. And one day we're going to train sisters in how to make some clothes. And now we want to get a little bit into the shelter of making, building homes, making bricks, making lumber.
Yes, sir.
So the next part of Muhammad Farms, we moved into that. So I really enjoyed that part of the trip up there to visit with the brother up there outside of Atlanta. So that's my beginning statement, so I leave it open for other people.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much for that opening statement, Dr. Ridgely. Sister Majida, would you like to share an opening statement with us this evening?
Sure, and I'll be brief. I wanted to comment on something that you just said, Dr. Ridgely, about those of us that are on the fringe and don't want to leave our, like you said, our mortgages and our lifestyle and how we're waiting and we're going to put ourselves in a corner. And, you know, I was just thinking on that and just that whole situation with everything that's going on now. You know, I would venture to say if that's our position, that we're already in a corner. If our life is just so hectic that we can't even think on or plan a way out of the way we're living, if we can't even think about being in a community surrounded by the principles of freedom, justice, and equality and in communities that we can control and with people that look like us, I would think to a degree we might already be in a corner if we're not looking to find a way out of that, especially in a time like now. But I just wanted to share that, you know, because the picture you painted, it almost sounded like we're stuck. You know, we've got ourselves in situations where we're stuck and possibly don't even know or have a desire to even try to work our way out of that before we're forced. But yes, I too had an opportunity to go down to Brother Farouk and his family's Freedom Nation Lab. And, you know, and again, like Dr. Ridgely, you said, I know we'll get more into it later, but, you know, it was just so energizing because, you know, when you have a vision, you know, to do a thing and work toward it, and then you're surrounded by other like-minded individuals, you know, it's just so energizing to see what we can do, you know, when we pool our collective knowledge and skills. And, you know, I'm really looking forward to the time when more of us are actually able to come down and be a part of the community building around Muhammad Farms. And that's my opening. You know, it's so funny, though, if I could just say this, you know, it's a little off topic. But in preparation for the show, and, you know, I listened to Dr. Ava's show, Elevated Places, and, you know, we hear Sister Ula get on. And, you know, I said, I feel like Sister Ula. I said, you know what, I just got through baking 6 loaves of cinnamon whole wheat raisin bread, and I got another 10 dozen dinner rolls and another 6 of these and 12 of those and some MF crackers. I just started laughing. I said, but, you know, we take the time and make the time to come to the Blog Talk Radio show and be available for those who have questions. So hopefully our audience is listening and will bring their questions, comments, and concerns so that we can entertain them. And that's my opening. Thank you.
So in other words, Majida, you're saying that you're very busy, and if you take the time, then other people can at least ask a question or say something, and I just hang out there on the line and staying safe. So thank you very much.
Yes, sir. So, yes, sir, I agree with Sister Majida, Dr. Ridgely. You know, with this particular time that we're living in, I think that our people really don't realize the opportunity that's in hand. You know, we look at ourselves in perspective, in the time perspective of the scriptures and the prophets, that they all were praying to live in the time that we're living now. We have an opportunity where we are actually living the time of the coming of God and the fall of the devil's world. That means one thing, you know, spiritually, but it also means a thing physically. It means that this government that's been our oppressor all this time, we have an opportunity to work towards leaving the oppressor and building our own world. That means whatever we want to do, whatever we want to establish, whatever we want to be good at, whatever we want to put in place, if we start preparing for it now, we'll have that opportunity. And I really started to realize that even more when we went to Freedom Nation, because this is a brother who I commented to you in the past that's one of the most, that appeared to me to be one of the most free brothers that I've personally ever met, because he's literally doing the things that God is blessing him to do, and he does not recognize any limitations or barriers to where he's going to go.
Well, that's kind of somebody who just wants.
I can't hear you, Doc. Can't hear you.
Okay. I got to get another system. Be back.
Yes, sir. So, brothers and sisters, if you get a chance, you can go to our Facebook page, Time to Leave, and there's a video they posted where Brother Farouk interviewed Dr. Ridgely and a little bit of me, mostly Dr. Ridgely, but they had mercy on your brother, let him say a few words. But it's mostly Dr. Ridgely, because I was between two heavyweights, so I wasn't trying to get in the way of the two heavyweights. But if you watch that video, get a little bit of what we experienced. But the thing is, this experience helped me, and if I could speak for my wife, it committed us to continue to strive to build our own community. And we just want to share that spirit. We want to share that spirit and that energy with you all, you know, this show, but even past the show, we're hoping and praying that, you know, Allah will continue to bless us, that we will actually manifest some things that, you know, when you all look this way, you say, wow, they're really doing something. I want to join on and help.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
So this show, right now we have 16 callers, and I see some of the phone numbers, So I'm not discouraged by the number of callers. I know the number of callers we have. So as I look at the numbers, there are regular callers. And, you know, I'm just honored that you all are listening, because that means that, you know, you are in somewhat agreement and supportive of what we're trying to say and do. So continue to listen, continue to pass on. And, you know, I challenge you all to do research in whatever fields that you think that you would like to fill this new world in. And as you do your research, as you gain expertise, and as you learn more, share it with us. Share it with us on Facebook. Share it with us on this show, because just as Allah is blessing us to maybe motivate you with what you're doing, that's reciprocal. We're motivated to hear what you're doing as well.
Right.
Right, Sister Majida?
That's right. That's right. You know, because, I mean, this is just not a group of five or four or whatever the number is. You know, this is going on nationwide. This is going on nationwide. The need for separation is just not an isolated group thing. And like I say, you know, being at Freedom Nation and seeing the brothers drive toward having communities that are free to be controlled, managed, maintained by ourselves, you know, it's so energizing. And who would not want that? And again, we say, especially with everything that's going on around us that is against life, that is against the principles of freedom, justice,
mm-hmm.
and equality. So who would not want that? So,
right.
Like you said, it just, you know, being in the midst of the brother and his family, and, you know, just watching his drive and his spirit and his knowledge. I mean, knowledge and highly skilled.
Well,
you know, it just it Allah arranges forces, resources, and people, and we know that there are no coincidences. So I'm just grateful to Allah. Like you said, to be among so many heavy hitters.
That's right.
That Allah fit, you know, to put us, you know, in the midst. And we know, because it is no coincidence or not by any happenstance, that, you know, for those to whom much is given, much is required. So we have work to do, and, you know, we're up for the task.
And we have a caller.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, sir.
Can you hear me now?
Better. Yes,
okay,
sir.
Okay, good. Go ahead. Take the caller, though.
Okay. Caller with the last four digits, 8767. What is your name and where are you calling from?
Hi, from Michael family. This is Sister Tiffany X.
Well, Legum Salam.
From Dallas, Texas.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, sir. I had a question in reference to the current situation that's going on in South Africa. Specifically, anybody can answer it, but I wanted specifically Dr. Risley to touch on it, if he can, in reference to just the land and how the white farmers, the government is going to be taking the land and redistributing it to the black farmers. I've been reading a little bit about it, and I just wanted to know, just to get his take on it, as well as know if that's a sign for us right now.
Well, let me ask you a question. What have you what have you surmised by looking at what's going on? What do you think?
Well, I think that it's, you know, knowing a little bit about South Africa and the history with the, you know, the genocide and the what do they call it? The different class system that they had set up. I know that it's, you know, past due for them to give our people who truly own the land back that which belongs to them. Because the people that, the Europeans that came and took over, that land doesn't belong to them. And so I believe it's just. But I just thought it was interesting, because even Trump commented on the situation, saying that, you know, he's in disagreement and, you know, he's against what the government, which is an African brother that's the president, is about to do. And some of the African brothers and sisters were just saying, you know, he needs to mind his business, you know, pretty much, and that he doesn't understand what, you know, what has been happening. But that is just, you know, my viewpoint on it. But I wanted to just, I thought it was just interesting with us now getting in the process of separating, you know, just watching them fight for that which belongs to them. I just wanted to see, you know, wanted to hear your take on it as it relates to
okay.
us as well.
Okay, well, you know, very good, sister. You're keeping up with it. And for Trump to make a statement that, you know, about he don't like what's going on, and then Africans say, well, he don't know what's going on. Well, that's not quite true. All white folks know what's going on in terms
right.
of white supremacy. And so the reason that Zimbabwe is such a pariah to the West is because they actually did that. They actually kicked out the over time they kicked out the white farmers. Now, this is the problem, okay? In the process of taking over the land, there's a complete change in the economic system. When they took over the land, before they took over the land, you had black people in Africa living in villages, you know, all throughout that area. And when they come and they push people out of the villages and take the best land, the first thing they did was produce crops to go back to Europe. As a matter of fact, if we look at our lessons in terms of the amount of useful land that is used by the colored man and the amount of useful land that is used by the original man. And then if we look at the population of the colored man versus the original man, on a per capita basis, the colored man is using four times the land of the useful land than the original man. So what does that mean? That means that, but yet, where they live at originally in the caves and hillsides of Europe, there's a lot of land that is not useful because it's caves and hillsides. So what they have done is spread out and go into Africa and take the useful land and then produce products to send back to Europe and then make enough there to keep them the Africans alive but not to thrive. And then take the profits and build up their communities and their world. So now when you take their land from them, you're not going to get that little black book of the market of where do they sell the product from. You're not going to get – they're going to destroy the like they did in other parts of the colonial Africa, the infrastructure. They're going to destroy their mills, their processing plants, okay, their railroads. So they consider that their stuff, and if they can't have it, you ain't going to have it. And then if you all now got all your people in the cities, which they do in South Africa – but who owns those stores? And then you got to have the refrigeration, the trucks. You got to have the storage facilities. So there's a whole system involved with getting – just because you got farm land don't mean that you can get the food to the people. For instance, we here at Muhammad Farms have been down here 23 years, and the problem has been – how do we get the food to the people stretched out over 2,000 by 3,000 miles? And yet they are not organized and concentrated enough to be able to ship a tractor trailer load, 40,000 pounds of anything to a particular city. And that's the way products are moved. They moved on tractor trailers of 40,000 pounds. So you might be in a city and you might want a carrot from Muhammad Farms, but it's just you wanting one carrot. So how do I get one carrot to you at a price that you're willing to pay? The answer is impossible. So when they take over, they will have the same problem that we have at Muhammad Farms. We have 1,600 acres of land, 900 arable acres, but we can't grow just anything out here and expect it to be sold, to be picked up or shipped, because we tried it. And the people are not willing to pay for the cost of the transportation to their city, and they're not willing to come and pick it up. So they're going to be faced with that same situation when they take over that system, is that now somebody's got to pay for all of that, and you got to know. In other words, that little black book, for instance, down at the farmer's market down in Thomasville, Georgia, I sit there and watch this white broker, all right, a phone to one ear and another phone to the other ear. One of the phones, he's talking to the farmers that's out of his little black book of producers. And on the other phone, he's talking to his buyers, which may be stretched from South Georgia all the way into Canada. And he's trying to match the two. But guess what? That little black book, he ain't giving that up. So if you don't get that little black book, you ain't really got nothing. Because that's the key, is those contacts. Who are the producers? What do they produce? When is, and your market, your buyers, okay? So when they leave South Africa, they're going to take that information with them. So you're not going to have – you got to start all over again because that whole system will be removed. And so they have to be ready to go through that. Now, in Cuba – When Russia fell, who was a major trading partner in 1989, the Cuban people, on an average, they lost 20 pounds each in a one-year period. And they thought they were going to starve. But they did not give in, and they set up another system where they weren't dependent on Russia as a trade partner. But it was very, very tough. And they didn't go to fight and kill one another. They were able to work it through. So South Africa has to be careful. As things go get in turmoil, which they will, then they can't allow people to start instigating warfare, okay, against one another. That's going to be the next ploy the U.S. is going to use. They're going to start some mess. And so, and blame it on the other side, and they blame it on each other. See, and they say, you know, we fight and killing one another. So they got to be prepared to go to warfare with each other and understand that they got to work together. And so egos got to be put aside for the betterment of the whole group. This will be a very trial situation for them. But yes, they are correct in demanding their land back. But it's not just the land that produces a system. It's the land. Yes, you must have the land, but there must be a system between the land and the people, and that system is going to be carried off with them crackers when they leave out. So we have to know. Most of us right here in America don't even know the system, in the sense that we go to the store every day. Let's say we go to Walmart any time of night, 2 or 3 in the morning. And you can go and get anything you want, one cup of it or a whole basket full of it. And so you never think about, well, how does it get there, where does it come from, what is the process. And you may be eating something that comes from one country one day and another country the next day, and you don't know it because there's a whole system behind that that backs that. And the reason the system can work is because of the volume of product that's moved. So when we, as we try to do, set up stores in our community, we find out that we can't compete on price. And since we can't compete on price nor on convenience, because we can't be open 2 and 3 in the morning, so we can't beat them on price nor convenience, so we may open up a little store, and there's a lot of excitement for the first couple of weeks or a month. But then people go back to what they used to because it's more convenient for them to do what they used to, and you can't compete on price with a system. You're only moving a certain amount of product. You're not going to be able to compete on price because you're going to have to pay bills that are going to be set. There's going to be, you know, fixed bills, the rent, the lights, your help. You got to pay that. And so we tell people from our study, to have a full-scale grocery store, you have to have between 500 and 700 families per week. You got to have 500 to 700 customers who are buying $20 or more worth of stuff to stay open, to have a small, complete grocery store. Now, how are you going to guarantee that? That's difficult to do. So I'm sorry I gave this long answer to your very good question, sister. And the bottom line is I'm glad that they're doing it, but they definitely need to be ready to be able to go through some tough times, and they might need to send some people to Cuba and bring some people from Cuba back to them to help them understand how to get through this hard time that they're going to get through.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much for that answer, Dr. Visually. And we have another caller, someone that you all are very familiar with. It's our very own sister, Ann Mufmin. Assalamu alaikum, Sister Ann.
Wa alaikum salam. And to add to what Dr. Risley was saying, we were in a meeting earlier today. Can you hear me all right?
Perfectly.
Okay. We were in a meeting earlier today, and people were talking about a farmer's market or produce. And there's a flea market. There used to be, Sister Majida and I, and of course you and Dr. Risley, have also been with us when we were at what was going to be a produce market down at Tiff Park in Albany, Georgia. Well, that kind of faded out somewhat, because we learned today that the real objective from the very beginning was not to have a farmer's market, but to have a craft market. And today we learned that that's basically what it's turned into. But the discussion went on, well, people can go to Kitty's flea market in Albany and get vegetables and fruits, because the Hispanics are out there, and they have basically taken over the farmer's market portion of the market. But then the conversation said, but the stuff you buy is really not that good. So my point is, and she said they've taken over because they support each other. And that's the same thing with most other ethnicities. They find a kinship with each other, so they support each other. But we know that here in this country, it was scientifically done to us to separate us and put in divisions and hatred among us that we don't seem to be able to overcome. And we've got to overcome those things in order to be able to work together to make our enterprises be successful. Case in point, other small farmers in the Nation of Islam, except for just a few. Brother Gerald, to be specific, they will not be a part of the National Ministry of Agriculture. Why? Why won't other small farmers in the nation join on to the Ministry of Agriculture? That puzzles me, because we can all come together, because what I see is that what Muhammad Farms can't grow, or, you know, not that we can't grow, but what Muhammad Farms is not focusing on, maybe some of the other small farmers could become proficient in the herbs that we all use, in growing herbs, to sell to those like Sister Majida, who processes her own herbal blends of seasoning. We don't think of along those lines. We still come in and we want to be separate. We can't figure out how to come under one umbrella. We think we'll be giving away our personal power, I suppose, if we come in and work together as the Ministry of Agriculture. But we have lots of people buying land and setting up operations, but they will not work with the overall Ministry of Agriculture. So we can direct people who come to us needing various things that these other people may have, but we don't know, because there's no communication, there's no camaraderie, they won't be a part of the National Ministry of Agriculture. so we just can't seem to come together and even do it within these ranks.
Yes, ma'am. Well, thank you for sharing that, Sister Ann. If you got a comment on that, brothers and sisters, press that one, and we're down to 20 minutes, but we'll still have time to take your comment. And we have two callers. I'm going to open the mic for caller number with the last four digits, 7668. Caller, what is your name and where are you calling from? And before you come in, caller, hold on. If we, everyone on the line that's not speaking, if you can put your phone on mute, we get a little static in the background. So if you're not speaking, please put your phone on mute. Go ahead, caller, 7668. What's your name and where are you calling from?
My name is Brother Mark X. I'm calling from Jacksonville, Florida. And I have a question. I really enjoyed Brother Dr. Ridgely's answer to that question so much. I wish he didn't. I wish he wasn't. There wasn't any time constraints. I wish he could have went on, because that was very interesting and intriguing and enlightening to me, as far as the dynamics of shopping and getting food and how we can help in our own self. But my question is, what are some of the things that an individual person that's in the city can do to kind of optimize and maximize our success? For example, I remember Dr. Richard talking about how there are certain things that don't, that require a whole lot of space that we can grow ourselves at our homes, versus the farm growing things en masse that is better for the farm to grow. Where can I, at least if you can't respond to that, at least where can I go to get information regarding this type of information to best direct us to how we can best help and assist in us being successful?
Dr. Vision, you still on the line?
Yeah, I'm off now. I'm all on mute. I was just following your instructions, Brother Charles. Anyway, but now what was the question? Y'all messing me up. How y'all can help? How y'all can help? Okay.
Yes,
first
sir.
Of all, it's kind of it's what we ask for people in the city to do is y'all got to get organized in the city. Okay, we can't ship to one person, and even if you set up a community garden, when that stuff comes off, you just one family can't handle it. Okay, it'll be too much. So the key is, we're going to have to come together within in the city. This is why we say if you either control the community that you live in, or you move to a community that you control. And we say to the people who live in the city that if you're going to stay in the cities, then you're going to have to organize yourself. You're going to have to set up some grocery stores. You're going to have to set up some bakeries. You've got to set up some restaurants. You're going to have to develop an economic system by which you can trade with one another. We cannot. Right now, you're in a system. Okay, your system is you working for Walmart. Okay, you working for Lowe's. You working in a job and then turning around giving all your money to Lowe's or to Walmart or to the other stores. There is a system that you live in that takes your time and labor, gives you a piece of paper, and you take it back to the cousin of that person who gave you the piece of paper. You take it to him, and you get what you need. And between the two, they decide on how much you're going to have and how much they're going to keep, and they always keep you in the lurch. Now, we're going to have to break that. That means that we're going to have to do trade with one another. We're going to have to be able to work together with one another. Well, you can't do it if you don't know one another and if you don't live close enough to one another to be able to do it anything with. I made a study at one time, and I found out that in any mosque or study group in those cities that I did the research, 25%, or one-fourth of those people actually lived in that same city. Now, I'm not talking about in the same neighborhood. I'm talking about in the same city. For instance, like right here in Albany, Georgia, we go to the Albany study group. Well, we got families in Brownwood, Georgia, families in Sylvester, Georgia, families right outside of Columbus, Georgia, a family down in Pelham, Georgia, America's Georgia, there's only maybe, is there anybody in the modern Albany who's actually from Albany? Live in Albany? Yeah, that's right. The captain, his wife. Let's see. Anybody else? That's about it. So if almost nobody in the Albany study group live in Albany. So then how can you develop a business? How can you do trade with one another? And you don't even live in the same city, but that's the same community. The ideal situation would be for them to live, us to live close to one another within a community, not just, you know, so we just completely scattered. This is why we're saying that we want to build a community around the farm where we get enough people, but we can, in fact, start economic development and to have some political clout as well, but we're too spread out, we're too individualistic. So the hardest job, it's easy. You can get my book on the business, science, business, the farming versus the art and hobby of gardening. You can get my book and you can learn how you do some raised beds, how you can build some raised beds, and how you can grow you some vegetables. You know, that's not hard. But the question is what you going to do with them when they come off? Because when they come off, there will be a bunch of stuff coming off, and you're not going to be able to can and freeze and cook all of it. You need somebody else to be there to get some of that product. But if that is not already set up in advance, then the stuff is going to be wasted. Then we find that people who set up gardens, they get woe out after the first year or two. They get woe out, and they don't do it no more. Okay? Because, it's not a communal. When we had villages, that was a communal spirit. And in Cuba, let me tell you how they work in Cuba. In Cuba, when it's time to hoe weeds, everybody get a hoe. I don't care if you got a PhD in non-hoeing, you go hoe, all right? So, and when it's time to harvest, whoever they need, the people they get the people to do whatever is necessary. But in our society, we have a classy bourgeois mindset. Well, I don't do that. That's not for me. I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to do that. And that with an attitude of I'm too good to do that. I'm too professional to do that. Then nothing gets done and there's no help for one another. And people who are doing the hard work get tired of feeling like they've been made a slave by those who think they're too good to help. So our problem is spiritual and cultural, not production. We can learn how to produce. You can learn that online. But the issue is we are not organized, we're not working together, and everybody is trying to get something for nothing. They don't want to be the sucker to do the work and other people to benefit off of them. You're not going to use me. That's that attitude that we got. And as long as you're working on these white man's jobs, we just had that same experience today, Sister Ann, when we started talking about going up against the system and organizing ourselves, somebody go pop up, wait a minute, don't be talking about the city because that's my job. You know what I mean? So when you're working with white folks, you know that you're going to have to be disunited against black folks because you won't have a job or won't get promoted because they're going to check you every now and then to see whether you woke or not. They're going to check you every now and then to see where you are a threat to organize the people to compete with their system. So you can't do this alone by yourself, and you're going to have to break away first by getting a group of people that you're going to work together with right where you at. Or if you can't get that group, you're going to have to find some place where you can group to do something because you cannot do anything as an individual in this system against the system.
Thank you very much, Dr. Ridgely. Brother Mark, I hope that helped with your question, and we're blessed to have another caller. Caller with the last four digits, 6960. What is your name and where are you calling from?
Hi, Assalamu Alaikum, sir. This is Sister Perdetta in Phoenix City, Alabama. How are you, family?
Well, alaikum
salam.
Yes, sir. I've definitely been enjoying the dialogue, and I know we don't have a lot of time, but I just want to say as encouragement, you know, as a new believer, which I still say that, but a lot of times that vision and that belief and that faith, I'm not going to sit here and say that's all it takes. No, you have to be busy, but you have to have a blueprint with busy. So that's why with my first Savior's Day on row G, seat 15, I saw the vision of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan and his explanation of the economic blueprint, because it really wasn't clear to me. And once I had that vision coupled with my own desire, you know, a lot of times the law just sort of moves you into these positions if you just submit and align with him, and that's what I did. I didn't know the first thing about planting a flower, but I knew that was what is going to be a part of my freedom, my journey. And so now 5.5 years later, I am down here. You know, I go to the Albany Study Group with Dr. Ridgely and Sister Ann and Sister Majita and yourself. I drive 1.5 hours by choice, because I want to be a part of that agricultural spirit, because that's what I'm doing on my 15 acres of useful part of this earth. But at the same time, like Dr. Richard said, you got to have a plan. And so the minister, when I went to Michigan in 2015 to Sister Betsy Jean's affair, I learned a lot there. And the minister said, I don't care what you do, go back and share. And so even now, you know, I've been a little brave and formed Eco Blue Farm Gods, which is just new people like my learning how to grow our food and how to trade amongst ourselves our seeds and tips and, you know, lessons learned and heartaches, you know, and it's fun. And we're trying to, you know, incorporate a like-minded spirit. And so I'm very grateful, you know, for the sisters that have asked, you know, me questions. I'm not an expert, but I'm learning. And now 3 years into growing, I'm up to 3 seasons of feeding myself and learning from Muhammad's farms. You know, we got to learn from each other, share with each other, and become one ummah. And I'm very grateful for, you know, the lessons that I learned from Dr. Ridgely and Sister Ann, what I see them doing, and believers who are moving towards the Albany area. You know, Sister Willie and Brother Aaron were my first examples when I moved down south. And just seeing their growth helped me spur my growth even further. And so I work in my corporate world. I work from home. I've worked for myself for about 25 years. I'm a project manager. I work from home. But when I get off work, I go to work on my farm and gardening, and it grows from there. It's not going to happen overnight. But Allah has sent me friends in all walks of life who are training me, and I'm training them, and we're working together. I have a good relationship with the Yahweh community. I have a good relationship with the Moorish community. I have a good relationship with my neighbors. And it's got to be together. It's got to be together. Our power is in unity. So I just wanted to share that and thank you all for this Blog Talk radio opportunity. I love dialing in and listening and feeling the pulse of our people. And just get a plan, a blueprinted plan, and if you see it, it will happen. Just get on down here. You can't keep talking about a plan. Just move on out, but don't put yourself at risk. Make a plan. That's all I wanted to share, and I love you all. Assalamu alaikum.
One point that's so key. I'm not going to ask you how many people you got in your squad. Okay, but I hear that you have a squad. In other words, you have made friendships in all walks of life. You have people who you're working with. And see, that is the key. Okay, you cannot do this stuff by yourself. Reach out. When I got down here to Muhammad Farms, we did not have any equipment. I thought I was supposed to have equipment. And when I got down here, there was absolutely nothing here but me and my pickup truck that I brought here. And so I said, well, I was sitting down here to be a farm manager, so let me manage. So what I did, I made
their relationship with the local black farmers. Some of them were not even farming no more, but they had some equipment. And I paid them to cut my land up with their harrow and their big tractor. Because I didn't have nothing. And I even told them, I said, well, you know, I thank you all for helping me, but you realize that if you help me and I stay and they find out who I am down here, I might be in trouble. But they said it was really hard. That's all friends do to a lot. But you got to make friendships. You got to work with somebody. You cannot do this by yourself. So that's why I said to Brother Mark, you got to have to get somebody working with you. You got to have to develop a team. And you have to work like the brothers and sisters in a team, and you can accomplish a lot. But yeah, you can grow a few things by yourself, but that's not going to be the key to be sustainable. You really got to work to get groups to work together. And from those groups, that's how villages were made. It was family and clan, then village, then nation. And now we've been completely split up and dispersed, and we're trying to figure out how we can get ourselves back together.
Praise be to Allah. Thank you for that comment, Dr. Ridgely, and following up with, and thank you, Sister Podesta, for calling in and sharing your experience and your comments. We're down to the last 3 minutes and 37 seconds. And anyone who's on the line at this time, if anyone has any closing comments, any of our panelists have any closing comments, we're down to 3 minutes. Anything you want to say about our trip to Freedom Nation, anything at all?
Okay, assalamu alaikum. This is Sister Ann. I just wanted to add to something Dr. Richmond said about everyone. There can't be any big eyes and little U's when it comes to trying to get some work done. Several years ago, I watched this program. It was talking about the Chinese manufacturing industry. And it stated that they had at that time, this has been maybe 20-something years ago, they would have to force the employees to take vacations because they loved working just that much. They had that kind of work ethic. And what contributed to them being so faithful to the employer is that top management at a certain portion of the day would go down and work on the assembly line with the workers, and they did not have salaries that were so far above the workers. So the workers knew that. They felt that management was not looking down on them. So the workers had that kind of generosity in giving their labor, and they truly had a love for what they were doing. And that is a model I think we can learn from.
Praise be to Allah. Thank you very much, Sister Ann. And we had a last-minute caller. Caller, we're going to squeeze you in. Caller with the last four digits, 4848. Go ahead, caller. What's your name and where you calling from?
So I'm looking this is Brother Alvin calling from South Carolina today. But
yes, sir. Real quickly, Brother Alvin.
Yes, sir. About the thing in Africa, I got a friend of mine in Zimbabwe, and he was telling me about the a lot of families in Africa got land before they start taking the land back that they can't use because they can't get supplies to work the land. It's also some of the government is kind of corrupt. And if they don't have the money to pay the bribe, then you can't get what you need. So they might need to watch out for that in South Africa also. It just change over whenever it comes. But I was just thinking about the separation program. Years ago, when I first came in the nation, I was wondering why we never really moved together. Mr. Abel spoke about this in the early 90s. And I always wondered why we never did that. That's all. I'm like.
Thank you very much, Brother Alvin. Those are words we all should think about. Once again, I want to thank you all for calling in to the Time to Leave Blog Talk Radio Show. And once again, tell your friends, share it with your Facebook friends, tweet on Twitter, Instagram it, tell them about the show, and stay tuned, and we will announce what next week's show will be. Thank you all, and may Allah bless you all with successful separation.
Won't you let me? Won't you help me? Won't you help me understand you?
Lord, I've really been real stressed, down and out, losing ground. Although I am black and brown, problems got me pessimistic. Brothers and sisters be messing up. Why does it have to be so damn tough? I don't know where I can go to let these ghosts out of my skull. My grandma passed, my brother's gone.
Alone.
I never at once felt so alone.
Alone.
I know you're supposed to be my steering wheel, not just my spare tire.
Down to Peachtree. Headliner, I challenge you to a game of horseshoes. A game of horseshoes!
Now I see the importance of history. Why my people be in the mess that they be. Many journeys to freedom made in vain by brothers on the corner playing ghetto games. I ask you, Lord, why you enlighten me without the enlightenment of all my folks. He said, cause I set myself on a quest for truth and he was there to quench my thirst. But I am still thirsty. Allow me to drink some more. He said, what I am searching for are the answers.